Where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And we died, Shelby. We died, and we are now in this hellscape determining what we're going to do for the rest of our lives.
Eternity. That's a long time. I feel like... Did you watch The Good Place?
No, I did not.
Because the whole premise becomes that anything forever is just going to be miserable. It's just a new hell. But that was in my mind as I was looking at the little details of the different heavens available to people. And I was like, yes. Yeah, I don't think I could make that last forever.
Mm-hmm.
The niche market of nudie colonies or German in the 1940s, but without the Nazis. Yeah, it's just not going to work out.
I did love all of the references to like people. To like the past versions of Eternity that were like vaguely racist.
Yeah.
This was really big in the 60s or whatever. Yes, we're talking about Eternity.
Yes.
Starring Elizabeth Olsen, mm-hmm. Miles Teller, mm-hmm. and Mr. Dua Lipa himself, Callum Turner.
Callum Turner. What is he from? Where has he been, Callum? He just like suddenly became a... As the Hollywood Reporter calls him, one of the boys, one of the rising stars, the Hollywood boys.
Yes. He, he's British.
Yeah.
He was in the Fantastic Beasts movies.
Okay. Snooze.
I feel like he's one of those people who was kind of in a lot of stuff. He was in that A24 movie Green Room. He was in The Boys in the Boat.
None of these are ringing a bell.
And then I think he was in some British TV shows.
Mm.
So I don't... Yes, he was in the War and Peace miniseries, which I did watch after I read War and Peace. That was several years ago. He was in something called Masters of the Air, which was a British miniseries. Oh, on Apple TV Plus.
Mm.
So he's been like around and doing things. Oh, also he dated Vanessa Kirby from 2015 to 2019.
Okay. Yeah, still nothing. But it's like, I know his face. It wasn't like, oh, who's this guy? But it was like...
Well, he was in the Fantastic Beasts movies, which we did see.
I saw one. Yeah, that's correct. But I do not... Is he... Yeah, okay. He was in the Nazi one.
He is the brother of the main character, I think.
Right. Okay.
So, cute. Like, yes. Like, do I remember any of the plot details from Fantastic Beasts? No, but like... It's like I've seen that person before. He was in a movie that I did watch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Callum's having a moment, I guess. He's in Emma. Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. You loved that. Emma, period.
I loved Emma, period. And you did not like it.
No.
But
no,
that's because I'm an Emma and you're an Elizabeth, I think.
I was always told I was an Emma, which I don't think I acknowledge. No. I don't identify with.
No, you're an Elizabeth Bennet. You're also very Joe March, and I feel like Emma is an Amy.
That's fair.
Which is why when I was reading Emma, I was like, oh my gosh, this is me.
Yeah. No, but I love Emma the novel. I was like, oh yes, queen. But Emma period did not work for me. But Callum's cute. Callum's having his moment and he's here. And you know, the funniest thing about this movie is that all of them at some point or the other tries to pretend that they're not hot. And it's like, guys, let's all calm down.
Yes.
Like, you're gorgeous. You're gorgeous. You're gorgeous. Like, you all make sense together. You know, none of you are the reacher here. So don't try to gaslight me about this.
Well, that's just like Hollywood in general. They're always casting hot people as not hot people.
Yeah.
And then if you do have like a quote unquote not hot person or aka like a not conventionally attractive person who is actually still hot, then the whole thing in any project that they do is about how they're not hot. You know what I mean? Like then you get Amy Schumer where it's like like that's actually her only talking point in any film or stand-up bit or TV show that she does is like, I'm not hot. And it's like, yeah. Well, you're still like, you know what I mean? It's like, yes, you're not like Zendaya, but you are still like an attractive like if you were in a room of normal people, like you would be right. considered attractive. You're yeah. just not a model.
Yeah.
But yes, in this movie, it is kind of like, oh, you guys are all very hot. You're pretending to sort of be normal people, but it's not like, is it working? I'm not really sure. I mean, yeah. I guess Callum Turner's supposed to be hot.
Callum, yeah, he's supposed yes. to be the hottest. But then at some point, Elizabeth is like, I can't believe you were ever with me. I'm like, look in the mirror. You're gorgeous.
Right. Uh-huh.
But that's neither here nor there. Eternity is the general premise is that this couple dies fairly close to one another and get to choose where to live their eternity out, except she realizes her first husband, who died in the war, has waited 65 years for her in this sort of holding place and is now pitching the chance to have an eternity with her.
Yeah, because it's like you die and you go to this sort of like purgatorial space.
Yeah.
It's like a hotel conference center kind of energy. Yeah. And you have to decide which iteration of eternity you want to go yeah. to. So it's like, oh, you can go to the mountains, you can go to the beach. Like there's yeah. some that are vague and kind of general. And then there's some that are like hyper specific, like, yeah. oh, this is like a nudist colony or yeah, whatever. Like,
oh, it's Paris in the 70s.
And yeah. so you can like just go by yourself, but also like if you have a partner or something, you can choose to go to the eternity with them. And so when Callum Turner's character died during the war, he just hung out at this hotel for 60 some years waiting for Elizabeth Olsen to arrive. Little does he know that Elizabeth Olsen remarried Miles Teller and they lived to be like in their 80s. Mm-hmm. So when they show up, like, they've been married for 50 years, but Callum Turner's obviously hot, and he's been waiting for so long that that's, like, a new level of romance for yeah. Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah.
Also, like, because he died during the war, their relationship was sort of short and was yeah. only, like, the good parts of the relationship, where her relationship with Miles Teller has been so long that, you know, they're kind of crotchety yeah. and they, you know, like to bicker with each other.
Yeah. It was interesting. Like, this movie right away was very, like, when the trailer came out, a lot of Mormon circles were like, this is very Mormon coded. And so watching it, I was like swept up in how Mormon it felt, like, very Mormon adjacent. And so that was like interesting to be back in that headspace because.
Wait, like how so? Explain because this was written by an Irish guy, so I yeah, don't think that there's any Mormon.
Absolutely plans. No tie to Mormonism, but Mormon heaven is like so specific, you know. It's like, and it's drilled into you. So this, like, in the idea of eternity for Mormons, it's you do go to this place, you do go to this middle place, and that's heaven. It's a general like happy place, and you're waiting for judgment day, and so. In that phase, there's a lot of like missionary outreach to people who didn't know Jesus, and now they get to accept the true church if they want or whatever. And then once you have your judgment day, you're assigned like a specific paradise, and that's either the celestial kingdom, the terrestrial kingdom, the telestial kingdom. And each of these kingdoms is like pitched as, well, it'll all be better than what we know now. So like you'll be happy wherever you go. And there's like rules and like expectations to it. But the most Mormon-y thing in this premise is this idea of someone being married to two people in the next life. And Mormonism has a very like specific kind of triggering expectation that you can as a this is sort of gender flip because in the patriarchal church, it's that a man can be sealed to two women, which means he will spend eternity with both of those women. But it's sort of like confusing about like, well, what does that look like? Like, you know, these women don't know each other or sign up for this, but now they're suddenly like going to be your wives, like, you know, very polygamy.
But a woman can only be sealed to one
man. Yeah, of course. But a woman can only be sealed to one man. So like in like if I were to divorce Rob and remarry, I would have to pitch to the literal prophet of the church that I want that first sealing annulled. So like in the eternities, that divorce is final too. And then I could remarry my second, I could marry my second husband in the temple and have that be my eternal. But like these prophets who, you know, their first wife dies or whatever, they remarry, they are going to have these 2 to 3 wives in the next life. And so like how that will look is kind of confusing and something that's not talked about because it makes people uncomfy to realize like, oh, wait, you're just going to have a harem. Like, that's cool. Wait,
okay. I have some follow-up questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say like Rob died.
Right.
Are you allowed to remarry or no?
I can remarry I can remarry like easy, but to be sealed for eternity.
Oh, okay.
I would have to break that.
So husband number 2 would be temporary unless for some reason or another. You were like, oh, I want my already dead husband removed from
exactly.
And this earthly paperwork is somehow transferring to heaven.
I mean, yeah, it's eternal, like it's covenants we make, right? So it's okay, like,
gotcha.
There's the legal papers we sign on our wedding day, but then there's also this whole like spiritual ceremony, and that's the deal struck with God. And so when you get that like broken
and then when okay so you go to the, like holding place and then there's a judgment day, is everybody judged on the same day or is it sort
correct
of like
it's like after day? The second coming. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So some people will have been waiting in that judgment day for like thousands of years and will have had a lot of opportunities to like, you know, become a Christian, I guess, or become a Mormon. And some people will be like sent right there during the apocalypse and have zero time to sort of like figure things out.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. So well, I don't know like how better backlogged things get, right? Okay, well, that's so the other thing
like,
is
in
like
in the line for judgment day.
Yeah.
Like, sort of be able to be frantically making deals.
Yeah, and there's just like so many little things about Mormonism that I was reminded of, like just the idea of like you will rewatch your entire life. You'll literally have this sort of movie theater experience to revisit your entire life. Which is something that happens in this movie too. Or there's like this idea that, oh yeah, like anywhere you like everyone gets something, like no, there is no hell. And you'll be happy where you are and you'll have the same sort of vices and the same sort of like, you will be who you are, even if you're in heaven in this paradise. And that's very reminiscent of a lot of the Mormon language. And like, and so it was kind of weird. It was very surreal to like watch this movie at times because I was like, kind of like, I don't want to say triggered because it wasn't a traumatic watch for me. This is a very fun movie, very light, but it was kind of like I hadn't thought about this discourse in so long. And I was like, oh man, yeah, this is scratching an itch. You know, there's something here that's very specific. It's like when you smell something and you're swept back in a memory. And I was like, yes. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. This is weird to be thinking about all this again. And like, and the language of like, yeah, you can't like change your heaven. Like you can't go visit people. That's also something that's talked about. Because, you know, in the perfect paradise, you'd want to be able to see your kids. So people in the highest kingdom in Mormondom can, there's an idea that they'll be able to like visit their family who weren't as righteous, but that righteous, those less righteous people won't be able to like go up the elevator. You know what I mean? So I could take a day trip to like visit someone who was a little worse than me, but they couldn't come up to the higher kingdom to see me. Right. Well, now I'm not in the higher kingdom, but you
right,
know
now
what
you're
I mean.
At the bottom.
Yeah, and like everyone will be satisfied. Like it's sort of like you won't be punished except that you'll be aware you could have had it better, I guess. But even with that knowledge, you'll still find a sort of paradisical enjoyment in your in your life.
I'm like, this is also fascinating to me because in my version of Christianity, like heaven, I think, sort of purposefully, but also just like from the Bible, is very vague.
Yeah.
So you know that they'll be, you'll be happy, you know that there'll be like no sadness, but it's very sort of, there's not a lot of details on what exactly you'll be doing there, where it is, who will be there, blah 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 blah.
No, this is a fantasy novel.
But then obviously there's also like the heaven versus hell situation, which again, like, isn't like, even the concept of hell is only sort of like vaguely touched upon in the Bible. It's not like that also isn't really drawn out to the same degree. What I personally want in the afterlife and in whatever like version of heaven I have, and now that I have it in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, if heaven is perfect, then this has to be there because this is what I want.
Okay.
I'm like, I am such a nosy ass person. I want the like full records of Earth.
Right.
You know, like I would like to be able to go back.
You're going
to
do that double feature. Yeah.
Get into people's brains, see what they were doing, see what they were thinking, watch history. Like, I feel like I could spend so much time just like going back and like looking through things, like obviously big historical stuff, like, okay, like what was going on with the JFK assassination, like how did that all come together, whatever, but also just like things, I mean, and then also things connected to my life, like I would love to be able to go watch my friends and see like, okay, what are you doing, what are you up to, what are you thinking, whatever. But then also I just think like people are so fascinating, like I would love to go back and just watch like friend groups or whatever in the Middle Ages and sort of see like, okay, what was this vibe like, what are they doing, or
your heaven is a movie theater, you just want
yes, exactly, my heaven is a movie theater. I'm just a nosy person, and I want to know things.
I think that's a great way to spend eternity. It's just
and I do
in other people's business,
like, yeah, like, and I'm sort of like, maybe that is the, like, maybe that is the point of like Earth, is that it does give you all of this interesting material, because there's so many people on Earth and so many lives and so many things. I feel like I could watch that forever and be interested, because even what, like, let's say I watch through the lives of every single person, it's like, then you can still go back and look at it.
Right.
You know, it's like, I think, I'm like, I want that. I want books. I want movies. Like, and as long as there's new versions of that coming out.
Exactly. I mean, I think I'd be
fascinated forever. But I think the problem that I have sort of with these like various versions of eternity that's like sort of tricky to wrap your head around as a human, and why I'm kind of like, okay, I think that whatever version of afterlife there is like, we're not really able to understand, and so why are we busy thinking about it, is like, all of the things that are interesting about the real world are the results of conflicts to a certain degree. Like, yes, it's lovely to like go out and, you know, eat an ice cream cone or whatever, but like movies, books, all of that is based on like plots of like people doing good things, people doing bad things, how those interact with each other. Like, even if you're hanging out with your friends, you're talking about conflicts and things that have happened in their life, in your life, things you're going through, things they're going through, things that happened to them or other people. If like there wasn't any of that, if there wasn't any sadness, if there wasn't any whatever, then I feel like it's kind of like, then the whole thing just becomes like flat and there's not really any interest or purpose there.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how does that work in eternity, of like transferring those things over, but then you're not sad about them, or you're not like,
right,
like you're just sort of like happy all the time in a weird, like drugged out euphoric state. Like, I'm sort of like, what is the version of this?
Well, you should join Mormonism, because they believe that you will be able to start creating your own worlds and your own conflicts in a way.
So it's like Minecraft.
Yeah.
Really. So we could be living right now in the world created by some Mormon in the past.
That's so interesting. I'm trying to remember, like, this is deep, deep, deep theology, and people argue about it, and there's no like real, you know, confirmed answer, because some people will be like, Oh, so you can make your own savior? Is that the end goal? And then other people will be like, no, no, no. It just means you'll like be able to create a world where you can talk to orcas and you know, because in heaven, you're just making more babies. Like that is the role of my
future. You can still make babies in heaven.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're making eternal souls and creating families forever. So it's like, yeah, at some point, I guess, I don't know if they've thought through that, you know?
They've really got you like locked in.
Yeah.
It's like you're just like a breeder for forever.
Correct, correct.
Also, like in heaven, will childbirth be like not painful?
Correct, I think.
They'll just like boop, pop yeah. out. Okay, great.
Yeah. Again, I don't know if it's really thought through or if people are like, well, we'll just figure it out there. But that's the idea, is that we will continue to procreate.
Okay. Fascinating.
So this movie,
let's
it was
get back
like
to the movie.
The movie was fun for me. I really enjoyed it from the get-go and kind of this, yeah, quirky idea of heaven and it really just being another choice. And even the people involved in it don't exactly know the answers. Like you have these afterlife coordinators,
yes,
who are there to help these newly dead spirits decide what's next. And they were both delightful, played by Devine.
Joy Randolph and John Early.
Yeah. And so Devine is paired with Miles Teller, who's the first to die, and he's very confused, and he's like, where am I supposed to go? I guess I'll wait for my wife, or do I not? Like, should I just go ahead? And she explains that it's like, yeah, most people just do their own thing, because you can't always coordinate who's dying, when you'll meet them, and blah, blah, blah. And so she's sort of like, just go do what you want. Like, you can't plan your eternity around what someone else might want. Which also is, I think, an interesting concept. And then, yeah, just having this set up as this sort of conference center where you are being pitched all these different heavens and you can get hyper-specific or general. And I don't know. Like, I thought it was a fun premise. And it's a very simple, like, world design. Like, it's very colorful and straightforward. And it's not trying to be, like, you know, this ostentatious, like grandiose, sort of like pearly gates kind of heaven. It's very much like, you know, you have a fake sunset and you have these sort of bizarre stands where you can go and read about different heavens and trifold pamphlets and stuff. So I thought the like set design made it fun and you're able to kind of exist in this quirky in-between space. And then of course the tension arrives when Elizabeth Olsen's character dies and comes to heaven and realizes she has this choice between her first love, who she never had a shot with, and her longstanding ornery husband.
Yeah, it's so funny. I think the script is really well written. And also, it's a great like romance, and it feels very sweeping and yeah, grand, and her having to determine these people or which of these people she's going to spend her eternity with. It was actually written and directed by this guy, David Frayne, who wrote and directed the movie Dating Amber. I don't know if I ever convinced you to watch this or not. Mm-hmm. Whenever people ask for movie suggestions, I always suggest this because it's set in Ireland and it's about a guy and a girl who are in high school and he's gay and she's a lesbian and they decide that they're going to like pretend to date each other
watch this.
And it's so cute. It's just, it has one of the guys from Normal People in it. And it's just like a fun little comedy sort of coming of age thing. And I didn't really realize that he worked on this until after I saw it, but I was like, oh, that does make sense because the writing on both of these is so like good and it's so funny, but then also it does feel like it's saying something and it does really touch in on some, I don't know, like very kind of important parts about life and humanity. But the central love triangle is so interesting because it's like, yeah, do you pick the person who you sort of like know better? Do you pick the person who's hotter? And she goes back and forth. Like, I do feel like you, because the movie is kind of from Miles Teller's perspective, you do feel like she's probably in the end going to pick him, and they have been together longer. But it does kind of like do a little bit of bait and switching.
Yeah.
Because there's this other aspect of this eternity where you show up in the body from when you were the happiest on Earth. And that's a funny bit because I can't remember if it's in the movie or if it was when I was interviewing the director, but he was like, yeah, you notice that there's like no teenagers in this.
Yeah.
Like nobody is the happiest when they're in middle school. So there's like no, there's like some kids, there's adults, but there's like not anybody like in that middle range.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point in the movie, Elizabeth Olsen realizes that that the body that she's in is the body with the first husband, that like she was happiest on Earth when she was with Callum Turner, not when she was with Miles Teller. And so she's like, oh my gosh, that means I should go to eternity with Callum Turner. And she picks that option. And
well, then, Miles Teller notices. And so he gives her permission as like, you deserve that happiness. Like if that's where you were happy, you should go be happy with him.
And they go to the mountains together.
And they go to the mountains.
And then she's like, wait a second. Well, because they've also been setting up this whole time that, oh, if you decide once you're in an eternity that you want to switch eternities and sort of try to escape and come back, that then you can get like arrested and thrown into this void situation. Yeah. And so you're like, somebody's going to do this at some point.
Yeah.
Because they keep sort of mentioning it. But then it's Elizabeth Olsen who ends up doing it because she's like, wait, I don't actually want to be with Callum Turner. I want to be with Miles Teller. So she has to sort of like run through the back. Like the machine rooms or whatever. And get to Miles Teller.
Yeah.
Which is a very like fun sort of action scene at the end of the movie.
I was pretty surprised by how emotional it was. Like it was like it was very sweet. Like it was very tender and thoughtful about relationships and sort of what you're talking about, where it's like, well, what does count as happiness if you don't have some of that tension to like reflect on? And so I was like swept up in every choice. Like at first I was like, yeah, you might as well just go with Callum, like whatever, just try it, like that was a dream you had, like might as well. And then you're like, wait, but then you have the nostalgia of like an entire life someone doesn't understand, and like how lonely that would feel. And she's like revisiting these moments with her husband and her kids that Callum just can't like identify with. And like his idea of what he wants is so different than what she ended up being. Like she's just a completely different person than who she was when she met him, just because of time and decades and life experiences and stuff. And so then I was like, oh my God, you're right. You have to be with Miles. And honestly, for like the first half, I was like, just go do your own thing, girl. Like, get out of here. This is crazy. I was like, just say bye.
And you're like, just
abandon
neither.
Your friends, abandon your lovers.
Well, she almost does somewhere. That at one point too, where she almost gets on the train with her friend.
Yeah, that would have been never. I don't think that's smart. I don't think you should go with a friend. I don't think so. I mean, it was a long friend, so I guess maybe there's enough history there. But that's a risky business.
With me, Shelby?
It's risky. That's all I'm saying. To only have one friend. To
I mean, you hang your eternity on. There, I feel like. The part that I really resonated with is when she realizes that, oh, wait, she actually likes complaining. And the part of the reason why her and Miles Teller are such a good couple is because the two of them like to sort of like bitch about things together. And I was like, that is very realistic. I'm like, I love sort of griping and groaning about things. Like, If I could not be with somebody who didn't like to gossip about stuff.
Yeah,
I'm like, sorry. That's my like number one favorite pastime. Like, and I know that I know that, oh, gossip bad, like we're not supposed to do it, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, actually, sorry.
It's community building.
If I'm not just chit-chatting with people about things, then like, what am I doing?
Yeah. I did see someone I think it was one of my friends, was like, I felt like they were too distracted with what's her name, Joy, or Elizabeth's character wanted, that they never...
Joan.
Yeah, they never talked about what they wanted. Or was it the opposite? I was like, no, I think this movie, what was honestly the most frustrating in the beginning, is that they are sort of like overthinking what Joan wants.
Yes.
And not really thinking about what they need. And so like, and I thought too, it was interesting to have this Callum character who romanticized his own life, right? Like he tragically dies in the war, not one of the big ones, but the Korea War. And he decides to just stay to have a shot with her, which is very romantic, but it's also like, well, what do you want? Like, you know, and it turns out he wants to hike and he wants to chit chat with people and like shoot the breeze and go skiing. And like his idea of eternity is much more relaxed and easy because he hadn't had a lot of life. And so he does just get to enjoy this sort of superficial, and not in a bad way, but just like a much easier existence because his life got cut so short anyways. And so when she's like deciding to break up with him and she's like, do you even like who I am? Like, do you even like me now? Is this what you imagined? And he has to like face the fact too that like, okay, yeah, this is all a little different, a little bit, yeah, just like messier than maybe you spend 60 years fantasizing about. And so like, I thought it was interesting to face those sort of human dynamics too, of like our own projections and expectations and like what reality does to that, even in a eternally blissful situation.
Well, the dynamics do change throughout the movie, which I also really liked. At the beginning, it is really focused on Miles Teller's character. And then you get into the sort of competitive nature of like, okay, these two guys like obviously want to win. So it's like, oh, which of them is going to get the woman? But then I feel like it switches partway through where then it sort of becomes more from her perspective. And it's like, wait a second, like, maybe I don't want to be with either of these people. Like, how do I sort of determine this? And then not that the guys like fade to the background, because obviously they're very integral with it, but it does kind of like shift the dynamics where it's like, okay, this is less about this like competition, quote unquote, and more about like what she wants from her eternity. I also think that this did really a good job at, I don't know, sort of like looking at relationship people. Yeah. Like, because I've been largely single most of my life. I feel like I'm a very independent person for, you know, various reasons. But I have friends who are like such relationship people.
Yeah.
And they're always in relationships. And it's like that is sort of how they view themselves. And I think that even when they've gone through single periods and stuff, and you kind of think like, oh, well, maybe this will sort of change them or whatever, it's very short-lived before they like go back right into that same kind of dynamic. Yeah. And I thought that that was interesting to watch play out in this situation, because it's like, yeah, I don't think either any of these three people really spent very much time on Earth like alone, like they were in these relationships. And so that's kind of how they view themselves, and that's why they're so attached to this idea in the eternity. Like, they're not really thinking, oh, I can go off and do my own thing, because it's like they don't really know how to do that. Which I thought was sort of an interesting dynamic, because I feel like even if I was in a, like, now that I've been single for so, like, at some point I will be in a relationship, but I think that even that to me has a, like, there's not a stress about not being in a relationship. Like, right. When I think about, I think it will in some ways be more difficult for me to be in a relationship than not. And I kind of think, well, when I meet the right person, like, it will work itself out and I will like that person so much that I'll want to do that. But I'm also kind of like, I think if I was to marry somebody and then like 10 years later they died in a plane accident or whatever, I would feel zero inclination to get into another relationship. I'd be like, okay, perfect. I did that. It was lovely. I love that person. We don't need to do it again. I'm fine like being single for the rest of my days. Where it's like there's lots of people who are in relationships and their partner dies. And it's like, they're so used to that, that it's yeah. like, you know, within weeks they're dating somebody else.
Yeah, no.
Also, well, yeah. Just one other point about like the character dynamics. I'm like, this movie is under 2 hours long. There are five characters really in this. Yeah. I mean, six if you count the like friend sort of. And it's like, all of them are so fully fleshed out. You know about them. You understand their dynamics, how they think. They're all interesting. They all have these backstories. I'm like, it's shocking what good writing can do.
Yeah.
Because you get so much in such a short period of time. Whereas Wicked is a longer movie, and it's like you don't know anything about any of these people or any of these dynamics, and we've had so much time because I think the writing on that movie is just so bad.
Okay.
And, yeah. and I'm just like, it's always shocking when you see something that's so good to be like, oh yeah, like this is how this works. Like yeah. I think about that every time I watch You've Got Mail, and I'm like, yeah. this movie, like every single piece of this is so rich because this writing is so specific and so yeah. well done that even these side characters, you feel like you know exactly who they are. And then you have these movies that you go and see where you spend so much time with these characters and feel like you know nothing about them.
Yeah, I mean, Wicked is a unique beast because they're pigeonholed by their own like premise of tying into Wizard of Oz, and so it right. does, the world building, it's harder in fantasy, whereas this, it's like you have a crotchety couple fighting in the first 30 seconds of the movie and you're like, oh, I know these people immediately. And it was fun to like see that dynamic, and I think they had fun with it in subtle ways. Like it didn't become over the top, but like Miles Teller and Elizabeth Olsen both played like an old person who's rediscovered a new body. Like the yes. way Miles Teller talked was like the crotchety, ornery old man, and like he was kind of slumped over a lot. And there's a lot of jokes about like, oh, my joints are feeling better or whatever. But I think they both like were able to capture that sort of like, I don't know, that sort of like boomer energy without mm-hmm. it feeling like an SNL skit. And so that became a fun dynamic to see. And then Callum, too, as this like young guy who's never known what it is to be old or to have kids or to have to navigate a sort of messy human, you know, dynamic. So there's like a lot of little moments in forming these characters. And then you got to see like the perfect facade of Callum kind of switch as he confesses like, no, I'm not perfect. Like, stop fucking saying that. And like that being its own sort of character trait that rings true and is familiar. So it was like, it was fun to be with these characters. And I did think it was like a well-crafted movie. I think it did sort of hold itself back at times, or kind of like the pacing got kind of muddled because there was this sort of inevitability to these decisions, but they really milked them in a lot of ways. And I do think in the end, I think they should have all gone together. I think they should have figured out a happy, poly, curious, friendly. Because it's eternity, you guys. You guys need to leave some space for the unknown. And I think that would have been fun in its own way if they'd found a way to have Miles show up in their heaven. And embrace that instead of Elizabeth Olsen ultimately deciding to run away with Miles to a defunct mm-hmm. heaven.
Yeah.
That's my only complaint. And it's not that it's like I need Callum and Miles to make out in this movie, but I think that they had an interesting friendship and they understood each other in the end. And there was a lot of fun, you know, riffing between the two of them that I think that just makes the most sense. I mean, maybe... Maybe it's hard to choose between the two, but I think that would have been my conclusion if I were in her shoes. And she yeah. has a fun moment where she's like, that could work. And they're both like, no.
I'm also so intrigued by like how big these eternities are.
Yeah.
Because like, even if it's the size of like a town, you know, there's like 5,000 people or whatever there, like that's a lot of, like you could come up with a lot of different dynamics over the course of an eternity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
You gotta like, you be could, the Secret Lives of Modern yeah. Wives. You gotta have that mom right. talk. Yeah. A little bit of a little fruity swinging. Exchange. Yeah. This is my belief.
Wait, what? So if there's a lot of versions of Eternity like presented here, but like what version of Eternity would you pick if you had to sort of pick between these different ones or, you the know, like other witnessed? Options? I mean, I don't remember all the ones we witnessed, but like sort of if you had to pick an Eternity that's like in, that's sort of like in one of these genres, what would you pick?
Yeah, it's hard because it's like, okay, if I pick one with modern tech, does that mean I could fly to Tokyo, or is it limited to whatever city I select? You know what I mean? If I choose Paris in 1999, am I stuck in Paris in 1999, or is there some adjacent, some community heavens we can intersect
with? I think no. I think like if you're in Paris in 1999, like you're always in Paris, and it's always 1999. It's not like, oh, you're going to move through time and eventually you're going to be in like 2020.
Yeah. So I think I'd choose something more generic. I would not do the mountains, and I would not do, I think it would have to be, I think I'd want like a, like a clean, I'm trying to think if I'd want to try a new city like Chicago, which I've never been to, or if I'd want to like just clean up New York City or like Tokyo and just be able to enjoy like a hybrid sort of existence like I'm in now.
I mean, but
with
I do-
no problems.
I do feel like a city is the best bet because there's just like the most going on there.
Yeah.
I think that the one issue is like if you pick a city, then you're never going to nature. It's like, okay, then the only nature I think if you pick New York, the only nature that you're getting is Central Park.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you can take the train upstate or whatever.
Well, anytime you pick one, it'll just end up sucking. But I think I'd be happiest at the beginning. Like, I think I could last the longest without getting bored in like a, I would say like a, let's say like a, how would I phrase it to get the exact right? Because I'd want plumbing. I'd want like, I'd want air conditioning, but I'd also want to be like next to something awe-inspiring. So like maybe like, Seychelles Islands,
okay,
on the African coast, so in a nice hotel.
Like, so you want to do like beach resort energy?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
I think I yeah.
See, yeah. Like I like a beach, fine, and I, but I don't know that that is like what is going to be like inspiring to me and interesting to me in the long term.
Yeah.
Like I do. It is funny because it, I think it speaks to like me being in the right place, but I'm like, I would just pick a version of New York for heaven because it's like, I love living in New York. I would spend, like, I would gladly spend all my time here. I think I could also do like London or Tokyo or, you know, like another big city.
Yeah.
But it's like, I love New York so much.
Yeah. Like maybe if we could do like I want Japan, you know, like if we could do a nation, then there's some more flexibility there.
I mean, yeah. I think if we, I guess if we could pick a country, I think I would probably choose England.
Mm.
Just because I feel like there's a lot of natural diversity there. And also it snows. I'm like, I really snow. And I feel like I want to be some, I don't think I would like to be someplace tropical. Like as much as I love Mexico City, I think that the, like, I would want some sort of like weather diversity.
Yeah.
I also loved going to Sweden this summer. So honestly, I could see myself there, but yes, that's also freezing. And I think Sweden has a little bit like less, like I think their nature is sort of like a little bit more one note than England.
And would you want to go back in time or
I think
try
no.
out a different decade?
I guess is the sweet spot like sort of the 80s or 90s, like before technology comes along as much, where it's like, okay, yeah, you have plumbing, you have cars, you have like music, you have movies or whatever, but you don't have phones. Because I definitely wouldn't want to go back. Like, I mean, I guess if you're not worried about getting sick, then you don't really need like medical things.
Yeah, you're like, but I want to go to Shakespeare, but no plague.
But it's like, I definitely wouldn't want to go past. Like, I need showers to be invented. Yeah, and I need plumbing to be invented. So I wouldn't want to go back, I think, past like the 19, like 20s or whatever.
Maybe you'd like old time Hollywood, but like no homophobia.
Yeah. I also am like, but with the clothes and stuff, like, do I want to have to wear like suits every day to things? That feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, you want the parachute pants?
Yeah.
You want that? Yeah. That'd be great. I'd love that for you. I mean, honestly, it is like, there is a part of me that's like, I think it'd be easiest to be happiest in, they end up where? Simple life. Like, it's like, I think if you, like that, and it probably speaks to what I wish I had, which is like, if you had a yard and you could just paint your house a color, like, wouldn't that be nice? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh man, wouldn't it be nice to just own something and have a pool that you can just lounge in whenever you feel like it? Like, that's the dream. And so it's like, in some ways it does, like, I wouldn't want to get hyper specific or like focus on a niche interest like museums or something. I'd want like an open space to just rest.
But I feel like you and I are also like, in some ways we're very similar people, but in some ways we're very different people. And you are definitely a more restful person.
Yeah,
or like more chill. Of like a lounger than I am. Like, you could like laze about, I feel like, for a very long time.
Yeah.
I hate that. Like that, like that would be my version of hell. Like, if I had to like sit around at the pool every, like, I need to be up and doing.
You need something.
I'm such like a busybody that I, I mean, like, that's why I love New York, obviously, so much, because there's just so many things to be doing, and there's whole like genres of things and neighborhoods and whatever that I have not even explored, that I'm like, oh yeah, like at some point I could get really into juggling and just, you know, like spend a couple of years like in juggling clubs or whatever, you know, like, not that I can do that, but like that is available to me in New York. Any activity, I feel like, with the exception of maybe like more nature kind of things, like, you can find people who want to do them. I'd rather not hang out, like, I'd rather not talk to all of these people. Want to go sit and read a book.
Like, I would not enjoy myself in that mountain world where I have to like make small talk with skiers. Like, that's just, that as soon as she said yes, I was like, oh girl, that's a regret, you're not gonna like that.
But also, I think like you would get to know the people, you know
what
I mean?
It's but
like, you wouldn't be making small talk for forever, because you would have a like, you would know every detail about these
but
people.
But they're not the people who would spark my interest. You know what I mean? Right. Like, speaking on assumptions.
Yeah, it's like crunchy granola.
Yeah, I'm just like, no, really, I do not want to go skiing again. Like, please. And don't want to be cold forever. Please. Like, no.
Yeah, like, I don't need to talk about sports.
I would be finding a way out of there real fast. Mm-hmm. That would be instant regret. Throw me into the void. I can't do it. But yeah, no, it was a fun time, and I think an interesting enough premise. Like, I don't think this is gonna, like, I don't think this made an impact in a way that maybe it should have. Like, I think it was a good movie. It was fun. It was different. It was thought provoking, and I was weeping through the last like 20 minutes of it. Not weeping, but just like teary eyed. I was just like, aw, relationships are so beautiful.
They really are. I think it does. There was something very inspiring to me of watching these relationships where, like, yeah, you've spent 65 years together or whatever. Yeah. Like, you just, you know that person so well. They know you. You have so much shared history and inside jokes and things to talk about. Like, that is like something that's really special. Because I feel like even like just you and I as friends for 10 years now, like, because I think we will have known each other 10 years in January. Like, honestly, wait,
I think
10 years ago, right now, I was probably interviewing for the job.
Because you started 2016.
Probably met 10 years ago, like it could have been today.
So touching. I should see if you
and you hired me. You were like,
diversity hire.
our favorite diversity hire, me. The diversity hire who didn't know that they were a diversity hire for another several years.
Yeah. No, it's like, I don't think this has performed well financially or maybe critically, but I do think it's a movie that people will like randomly stumble on and be like, oh, that was fun. It seems like a good airplane movie.
I mean, yes. I'm like, this movie got a 77%. Yeah. It has a 77% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is good. I sort of like wish, yeah, that it had done better, I guess, at the box office. I don't know how those numbers have played out. But I also think it's like a weird, like, I think they're doing a weird release. Like, I don't think this went like fully wide. I think it's sort of like rolling out because it's an A24 movie.
Yeah.
So it just came out at the end of November, but I think that was like limited. So I don't know exactly how that is all working. But this feels exactly like the type of thing that you would like watch on a plane, watch on streaming, like, and that people will, like, I can't imagine a normal person watching this and not liking it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like I can see criticisms of like, oh, the ending took too long, or oh, the jokes in the middle with her being indecisive were kind of like frustrating. Like, I'm not saying this is a perfect movie, but I do think in general, like, it felt like a really, it knew what it was and it owned it and it was fun.
But this is the type of movie that I think like the worst audience for it are like the critics to a certain degree. Like, I think if my siblings went and saw this, they'd like this. If my dad went and saw it, he'd liked it. If my mom went and saw it, she'd like it. Like, I'm sort of trying to think of a person who I know who's not like a New York, like, critic-y person who would go and see this and not be invested and not think that it's funny and not sort of take like
there's
away.
There's enough
like,
of oh, it. Yeah, there's enough yes, good in
like,
it.
Yeah. And it's not something that it's not like too smart or too boring or too whatever. Like, it's not like it's a romance, but it feels like there's a lot of sort of like masculine sort of elements to it that I think even like somebody's dad or brother or whatever would like be interested in this, you know. Not to
remember when Callum was like, I had sex with women and a couple of dudes, I don't know. Just trying.
Yeah, it's like, well, when you're waiting around for 64, and honestly, we should all have that approach.
Yeah,
not exactly. Me. I'm actually good. Yeah. I don't need to have sex with a woman, but if well, people feel so inclined, you know,
that's what I'm saying. Miles should have been a little more open to trying things out, going together, going into the future together, owning the pieces you had for one another.
Okay, but I want to interrogate this idea for a second. Okay, so let's say you die first, and Rob remarries, and then it's you guys are going to go to heaven, and it's maybe the three. It's you, Rob, and Rob's new wife. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about that?
Well, if I get along with her, great. And it's like, I don't have to hook up with her, but I do think when I'm facing down the barrel of eternity, I'm going to be flexible. I'm going to be like, yeah, this is going to be a new experience and we'll probably have to get creative at some point. You know, I don't even mean just like sexually. I think it's just like, that's a long time. So it's like, I feel like there'd be an openness there that wouldn't be as rife with the complications of a mortal existence, right? Like, you wouldn't have the same, I don't know, like jealousies or kind of like limitations in your perspective of relationships. So it's like, would I want to be a sister wife in the sense that Rob gets to dictate all this sort of like relationship dynamic? Absolutely not. No, sickening. But if it just so happened that like she provides something, I provide something, I get something from someone else, I, you know, I just think it's like, you have to be open-minded.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if she's like a bitch, I'd be annoyed, you know, like if it's like, this is who you replaced me with, like, what does this say about you? I don't even know you anymore. Then that's something else. I was like, as I was watching this, I was like, what would it be like? Like, is Rob secretly, if Rob woke up, if Rob died and he looked different, like if he was the happiest version of himself with his ex-girlfriend, like how would that make me feel? Yeah, I'd be saying goodbye. I'd be saying, you okay. have a good eternity. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Well, because I guess I think the question is like a risk versus reward kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Of is being in the eternity with Rob, mm-hmm. like, and having the options that involve Rob, like, worth having the options that also involve, like, Rob actually realizing that he likes the other person right. more than you,
or whatever.
And having to deal with that versus going to an eternity where Rob and the other woman are both not there, and then you get to the eternity and like maybe you find somebody else, maybe whatever, you have friends, like there's lots of options, and sure that like tech, like negative things could also happen in that eternity, but although I'm guessing now that I'm saying this, now that I'm talking about this, I'm like you could, like I feel like what all of these eternities are going to end up having like weird, messy relationship dynamics.
Because you're stuck. Because
even if you go in by yourself, they're definitely going to, it's going to be like college where like you're like, you've hooked up with people, you've dated people, and then all of a sudden, like, you're stuck in a class with like your exes, you know, whatever.
Well, and they're like, they make a point to like say these fill up. So there's a limit, right? Which they're one of the funnier like background things was like a world without men, now full, waiting on world 700,052 to be built. And it's like, okay, yeah, like I think in that in this world, in this concept, it's like, yeah, so no matter where you end up, since there's any sort of limitation on it, you will get, it will get messy, it will get, it will get prison like, you know.
Wait, do you think that they would let me go to lesbian world? Because I'm like, actually that is the idea that I want to spend
that's interesting
in.
Do you, I mean, it would depend on if the lesbian world wanted you, you know.
I guess that's true.
So maybe you'd have to make a new heaven of lesbian allies,
of all lesbians and then just me.
Yeah, because I'm sure some lesbians would love a gay best friend, a GBF, if you will. That's probably honestly where I'd end up, is a world without men. And I say that with all the love in my heart for so many men. But I think I think just that pitch of like, haven't you had enough of the bullshit, would be like, yeah, I have. I am signing up for this. Done. No, case closed.
But like 1,000%. Like,
yeah.
I think the worst hell that I could be in is a world of just gay people, of just gay men. Like that, like honestly, if I had to pick demographics, and I don't want to sound homophobic, but like I think I might take an eternity of all straight men in me.
Oh, no.
Before I took an eternity of all gay men.
I don't know, like, if you can say that. I don't know. I'm worried about what you're choosing.
I'm like, I guess I don't really know that many straight men. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, the straight guy, Rob seems lovely. I'll hang out with him. No. I think that there is like a sort of like dullness to straight men.
Yeah.
Where like, I could sort of just like go about my business and not really have to interact with them very much. Because if you're a woman, you have all these straight men who are like trying to, you know, like
harass your own,
whatever. Yeah. Yes. Like that seems like a nightmare scenario. For me, it's like, as a gay person, the straight men don't know what to do with me.
Yeah.
Don't want to interact with
you're
me.
Safe.
Will be like avoiding me at all costs. I will sort of have the eternity to myself. And I can sort of, you know, it's sort of like go in and cause
pretend,
some and do some like rabble rousing when I feel it. But otherwise, they're not going to try to get involved. I can be like, hey, you guys, let's watch Drag Race. And they'll be like, no, whatever.
Yeah,
but then like maybe they'll sort of get invested. Where with gay people, they're going to constantly be up in each other's business. Mm. It's going to be nightmarish. And if they are, at the end of the day, men, terrible people. I'm like, whereas if I could pick an eternity with all women, especially queer women, like that is the perfect option.
Yeah.
Like they are the best people. They're like the best of all spectrums. Yeah. I'm like, ugh.
That's cute. You know what? I know you're a hater, but maybe Barbie Land, like maybe that premise would be.
No, I think
place.
Barbie the movie I did not like, but I would love to hang out with the Barbies all day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they seem fun.
I would love to be Alan.
Yeah. He'd be a good Alan. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I'd be a great Ken too, because you're not hooking up with anybody.
Excited,
you know,
to be there.
It's like, I'm like, just pretending to date somebody.
Yeah.
And going to dances, being like, oh, hey, Barbie, like, I'm in love with you.
Yeah.
But, like, not really.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
I could be a Ken.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
No, this movie, it was so sweet. I really did like it. I just put out my top 25 movies of 2025 list on my Substack. And which, I mean, our listeners, you don't need to go engage with that content because we will be getting to our end of year rankings.
Yeah, it's a alarming preview of what's to come in some ways.
But also in some ways, it's like I included some things on that list that we will definitely not be talking about.
Yeah.
So there's stuff on there of that regard.
And I feel like I've never heard you mention Fight or Flight, but it suddenly shows up in your roundup.
Did we not talk about Fight or Flight?
Did I not tell you to watch that movie? No.
Because that feels like something that you would like, actually.
I looked it up. I don't know what it's streaming on, but I'll find it.
I think I want to say it's an Amazon movie, but it's actually not an Amazon movie. I think it's like Lionsgate or something, so I'm not really sure where that is.
Yeah.
But no, it's so good. It's like this like washed up assassin ends up on an airplane with all of these other assassins. And so it's him and the sort of like sassy flight attendant who is the sister in Bridgerton. I haven't seen it. I haven't watched that season.
It's like Bullet Train, but airplane.
Yes. And yes, it's Bullet Train, but shorter and better. And and they're on this airplane. And it's very like sort of campy, kind of also like Carry On energy, if Carry On was better, you know what I mean?
I really enjoyed
it a lot. It's very zany. There's a scene where there's like a kill scene in the airplane like bathroom that is like forever ingrained in my head. So it's a great movie. But yeah. I almost put Eternity on my top 25 list. Like I was trying to figure out what to cut instead of it, and I ended up not including it, but it was like
you
right
said,
on
no,
the line.
Eden has to be.
Well, I was like, I want the thing with the top 25 list also, which I think is different than our year end of year ranking. Like, I don't think the top 25 list will be the top 25 movies on my end of year ranking. As like, I know maybe that does not sound.
That's poor journalism. You're lying.
But
to
you
your
have
audience.
To. But it's like you have to. It's about like curating a list.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like you want different types of movies on there. Like I hate when Vanity Fair put out their best of the year list and they laid off their critics, so it was just like a staff kind of picks or whatever, but it was all like Oscar movies. There were no blockbusters, there was no like funny things, there was no like, oh, this movie got bad reviews but I like it. It was just all like things that are going to be in the best picture lineup. And I'm like, this is such a boring end of year list. Like, in order to make, I think, a really good end of year list, you need like, yes, the One Battle After Another Sinners, like things that are getting good reviews, but you also need a couple of indie things that no one has ever heard of. You need a couple of like big sort of blockbusters. You need a couple of things that most people hated, but that you liked for some reason. Like, you need a nice variety. And so some of the things on the list are like, okay, well, maybe this was actually like, if I empirically rated it, my 32nd favorite movie, but I felt like it would be more fun to have on the list than if I included, you know, like, I don't know, like Hamnet or something, which is like a good movie, but I, you know, like it's on everybody's list and I did not really feel any particular attachment to it.
Your subjective list. I think it really does give insight and, you know,
into my mental health, I think mostly.
Mainly. Yeah. That's what I was hinting at. But yeah, I think the end of year wrap up for you is just a fun experiment for me to try and parse out. Do I know this person?
And do you feel
do
like
I
you
understand
do?
You? Yeah. I think.
What are your takeaways?
No, yeah, it was a good list. I don't remember. There were just a couple of ones where I was like, oh, okay, that's a classic Matt. Throwing that in there. What a plot twist. But no, I see your thought process. I think it speaks truth to you for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No.
And I did screenshot a few to be like, okay, I've got to watch this. So good job.
Yay. Well, I feel like our tastes overlap in some ways and don't. And there's always some things that it's like, I think you're going to like that you hate, or I think you're going to hate that you like. Yeah. And I feel like it goes back and forth. But there are some types of movies where it's like, if you do a end of your list and like Greenland or whatever is high up, it's like, okay, yeah, that makes total sense that Chelsea would have that on there.
I do love that we're a whole year into you talking about On Becoming a Guinea Fowl. And now I'm just like, Matt, you don't even get it.
No, and Matt. I was thinking about that when I put it on the list, because I was like, wait a second. Like, I'm like, I need to rewatch this again, because my whole theory about On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, which I thought was like so why the movie was so brilliant, apparently is not what anybody else thinks about it. So I really need to, I'm actually going to add that to my rewatch list.
You have to.
Because I am like, I want to watch it with the viewpoint that she killed him and see if it lines up from the start, because I think it does.
But it just, that's not the point. It's not. It doesn't.
But I think it does. I think it is the point.
It's not an assassin movie. It's a coming to terms movie with, yeah. Anyways, we don't have to do this discourse again, but I was like, wait, didn't we talk about this on our year roundup last year?
Well, the thing, so this is so annoying, and I hate this about.
But how did I see it? You know what I mean? Like, I know that you have to include some things you actually saw in 2024 or whatever.
So,
but wasn't this on our year roundup?
So I think this is what happened.
Okay.
It came out at festivals in 2024 in the fall, but it didn't get. But rather than do the qualifying run for Oscars in 2024, they saved it and did it and just like put it out in early 2025.
I was able to watch it on screening.
But I think
before
but
our
sometimes
Oscar episode.
It's hard for it's yes. So I think that it was out in time for you to screen for our Oscar episode. But then I also it's confusing sometimes because it's not like there's one site that you can go to that tells you whether or not it's like
Oscar eligible,
like whether it qualified last year or this year or whatever. And that is what most of the, like what most critics sort of go by. Like if you look at it, like On Becoming a Guinea Fowl is on other people's lists for this year, even though it like came out in 2024, but it's not like you can go and look that up. And Letterboxd is really annoying.
Oh yeah.
Because they list movies by whenever they first played a festival.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's things that are like, oh, this is a 2022 movie. And it's like, well, yeah, because it played Tribeca in 2022, but then it actually didn't come out in theaters for anyone else to see until 2026.
Yeah.
No, and that's forever. Like, I wish that you could like change in the settings and pick like, okay, I want like the U.S. like wide release date or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then that's also confusing because there's a bunch of movies that are Oscar eligible for this year that had like qualifying runs where they, you know, played one city or whatever at some point this year, but then they'll have like, it's the actual like release will be in like February or January. So it's like, it's still before the Oscars, and it's like the movie has kind of come out, but then not come out. It's also really hard as a journalist to like pitch when to write about these things. Cause it's like, okay, do you write about the movie like Hamnet or whatever? It's like, I saw that in August. Do you write about it when it comes out of the festivals, when it has its limited release, when it has its wide release, like when it gets nominated for Oscars? Like, you could write about it. And then by the time it actually comes out in theaters, people have been writing about Hamnet for 4 months. And so it's like, okay, well, is there actually anything new to say? Like, should we have just written about it back when no one could have seen it yet? Like, who do you... Because, I don't know. It's annoying. But anyways, this episode is gone.
Anyways.
Wrap it up.
Anyways. Okay, perfect. Well, I'm at good movies coming. I don't know what we'll cover.
Yes, I'm like, wait, what's... I'm like, let me look at the list. Oh, well, we have Ella McKay. We could talk about that next week. That's it's like Jamie Lee Curtis. I actually have no idea what it's about. I'm seeing it.
I thought
this
it was a TV show.
No, it's definitely a movie.
Oh, okay.
And it's Jamie Lee Curtis and the girl from Sex Education, but then also a bunch of other random famous people are in it. Okay. But I also feel like there's the new Knives Out movie comes out on Netflix this weekend.
Okay,
so that's what we should probably do our episode on.
Okay, perfect.
And then the following week we have Avatar 3 and all of the Christmas movies.
Okay,
Marty
perfect.
Supreme, Anaconda.
Oh yeah, I can't wait.
Can't wait. Okay, so we'll be back next week with Wake Up Dead Man,
A Knives Out Mystery. Okay.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. See you then. Bye.